Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the DS Task Force conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Secretary Diana Dooley, California Health and Human Service Agency. Please go ahead.
There we go. I got it right. No, I think it's I can hear myself. So the microphone. Let's see. Where is from San Diego? I'm playing for Carlos. Carlos isn't here today, and all our mics should work without Carlos. And Carlos may be with us on the phone, and we'll go to the introductions in a moment. But before we do the introductions and I say a few things, I want to have Jim Soonan go through just the housekeeping details of the room and the day and the process. So, Jim.
Good morning. For all those that are in the room, the microphones that are being used for the task force members are wireless. So if you use them and need to move them to the person next to you, just don't cover your hand over the back of the wireless microphone because that's a sensor and it will cut out. For those on the phone, you'll be in listen-only mode, but there will be a public comment section during the meeting. And we ask both callers and task force members to identify themselves so that everyone knows who's speaking. For those here in the room, the restrooms are right in the hallway here. And during the lunch break, there are a variety of restaurants right in the vicinity for those that want to catch lunch nearby. And with that, I'll turn it to Secretary Dooley.
Great. Thank you, Jim. It is my pleasure to be here with you again today. I look back on the work that we have done together over, I can't remember what year we started this. It was 12 or 13, was five years ago. There are so many things that I could reflect on and comment on, the most important for me at this point is the terrific leadership team that we are building at the department. Nancy Bargeman and John Doyle are extraordinary leaders, and as we have evolved in what started as a conversation with everyone on the table about the future of the developmental centers. We then had an intervention from our federal partners that sort of forced, and although the transition away from the institutional care has been a 40-year journey, and so as we began to develop the plans for the future of the centers, and the work that we are doing together evolved into the future of the programs itself and how do we really thrive in an integrated environment. It became clearer and clearer over the last few times we've come together that there is that from my perspective, there's continued value in the cross-section of people that we've come together here in this task force to providing support and guidance to the department as we go forward. So we have talked internally about transitioning from a secretary's task force to a department task force that may not continue over time. I think we have the right leaders in place at the department. I think we have learned to respect and value each other and the safe place that we have created in this task force environment to share candidly from a variety of perspectives. This will be sort of my last meeting you. I may drop in from time to time because I value the conversation and the insight that I have gained from the input you've provided. I do want to say this through the update section because that's always a good shorthand for me to catch up. I'm very delighted to have our consultants here to walk through the where we are on the rate study, which is so important and was an outgrowth of your advice and recommendations. So I will leave that to you to walk through. But I want you to know that you have impacted me very deeply. You inspire me. You've humbled me with the depth of your commitment, the consistency of your allegiance to this population that we serve, and the advice and guidance that you have provided. So I hope that you will continue to do that to us broadly through at the State of California, the department, and I just couldn't be happier to have John and Nancy as partners. So we're going to do the introductions, and after the introductions, Nancy will take the leadership here. Chris Kent, the Assistant Secretary for this program area, will continue to engage, and so I will still get the information, and certainly the agency will continue to be engaged, but I will try to dedicate the time I have. I go back and forth, you know, about 1 year left. It's hard to believe there's 7 years into this administration. And I, at any given moment, in any given breath, I think, oh, my God, how can I do 12 more months? It seems like an eternity. And at this very same moment, I think, oh, my God, only 12 more months. I have so much left to do. It will go quickly. I am looking to do as much as I can to cement the gains that we've made and continue to push the transparency and openness and engagement down into the organizations of this agency. Continue to help people understand how much we can do when we do it together and not in hierarchical, isolated, siloed ways. That's been something that's been very important to me in the time I've been privileged to be here. So I'm just going to introduce John and Nancy. You all know John Doyle and Nancy Bargeman and Chris Kent, who is the Assistant Secretary at Agency. And we'll start with Mareva Brown and go around the room.
Hi, Mareva Brown. I'm with the Senate Human Services Committee, and I'm representing our Chair, Scott Weiner, who is an appointee.
My name is Kiku Butler, and I am appointed by Secretary Dewey for the California State Council on Developmental Disabilities.
Oh, thank you. That's better.
Good morning, everyone. Erin Carruthers from the State Council on Developmental Disabilities, facilitating Councilmember Keisha Weller.
Good morning, Catherine Blakemore, Disability Rights California, and I want to just thank all of you for your work in getting us this far. I think that has a nice product. Thank you. Thank you. Catherine McCoy, Golden Gate Resource Center, and again, thank you so much.
So just a quick housekeeping thing. You have to push the button at the bottom to turn it on.
And then turn it off when you're done speaking.
Good morning. Dana Hooper, Life Services Alternatives.
Will Sanford, Futures and Support.
Carol McKinney, Harmony Home Associated, California Supported Living Network.
Ron Cole, United Service Policy of L.A., Ventura, and Santa Barbara Counties.
Boy Bradshaw, Res Coalition.
Christine Moll, Associate Professor at Fresno State University, Speech-Language Pathologist, and most importantly, the parent of a young man, Adam, who is 34 years old and almost 2 years ago made a successful transition from a developmental center into community living.
Mark Barg, SEIU Level 1000, also teacher for the STAR program.
Marty Emoto, family. I should start singing. Marty Emoto, family member. My older sister, Lena, had developmental disabilities. She passed away, can't believe it, now it's almost over 14 years ago almost. And also an advocate, CDCAN, California Disability Senior Community Action Network, and also the California Person-Centered Advocacy Partnership. And I also want to echo what Catherine said, our appreciation for the work of everyone around this table, but also you, in particular Secretary Dooley, and also the others there. So I'll notice you shifted where you guys sit, too. I'm not. Oh, okay. Well, you're getting closer to the door, so I wasn't sure if that had anything to do.
Secretary Dooley, just because I'm afraid that maybe at some point you're just going to kind of quickly slip out that door, I just want to also extend to you my deep appreciation for what you have done here. I know that this is but one slice of a very big pie that you oversee. And I know that you have many, many accomplishments that you have achieved over your service. But the accomplishment that you have achieved here to bring this very diverse group of people together, to have the very difficult discussions that we have had, to formulate recommendations that, as far as I can see, are absolutely being carried through, that is a remarkable accomplishment, and I just wanted to express that to you before, like I say, you go flipping out that door. So can we please give Secretary Dooley the due she deserves? And
is it on now? There we go. This is Nancy Bargeman. I was also going to extend my gratitude to Secretary Dooley, but I could not say it as well as Christine just did. So, but I am going to also, as a department, and then coming in during the process as a deputy director and being a part of the task force, listening to the work that everybody did under your leadership, Secretary Dooley, and then I think coming in as the director of the department, having the foundation of the work that Secretary Dooley, that you have done, but then the task force has just been remarkable, because it really has. It's been a very informative process. It's been a place to be able to help inform us as we move forward. And so I feel very, very fortunate to have kind of the gift of the task force as the director of the department to help kind of guide. So very, very much appreciate. We're just going to lock the door. She can't sneak out. So not to worry. You know, we'll just lock it. She'll stay. The other part, I think, is just because there's so many departments under Health and Human Services, I think we're extra special. Of course, Secretary Dooley's, all her children are really special, but, you know, being one that likes to think that we're extra special, it just really is something that I think we've been given a gift as a system to have the leadership of somebody that cares so deeply. And so, again, I take such a warm responsibility of continuing the work of the DS Task Force to heart, because I do see kind of the gift that's before our system of having the efforts of what we do. So thank you for giving that to us. So we have a lot of updates. We have a lot of, when I looked at the agenda for today, I'm like, okay, we have a lot to do to keep things moving forward. So there's a number of updates that we want to provide, and I'm going to make sure that we have some of the staff at the department that's going to be a part of it. Unfortunately, Brian Winfield was ill today, and so he's not able to be here. I'm going to do my best to try to do the best Brian impersonation as I can. So bear with me as I give some of those updates, but I'm also going to have some of the staff help as well. So we're going to give a quick update on the developmental center closures, and then Dwayne will help fill in some of the elements of it that I may have missed. But again, the work that everybody started doing and setting a foundation and developing the community resources to be able to have strength in the community as folks are moving from the developmental centers has been really remarkable over the last several years. We still have quite a bit that we're developing. We're going to talk some more about the safety net. We're going to give some more updates regarding the work that we can do within the change from community placement plan as it moves to a community development plan. So there's a number of things that we'll be able to go over today. But I do want to just give you some current information regarding the closures. So we currently have, as of the middle of December, for looking at the populations at Sonoma, Porterville, and Fairview that are a part of the closure, we have a total of 417 individuals that still remain at the developmental centers that are going to be transitioning to the community. For Sonoma Developmental Center, all of the resources, the homes, have been acquired. They're going to be in they're all in the process of either final stages of development or in the stages of doing the renovation and development. That includes not only residential, but also includes day services, also support services, and then a federally qualified healthcare center to help with some of the medical services, not only within Sonoma, but where there's some development. Phil Binet has talked frequently about the work with the FQHC and through Alta Regional Center, particularly focusing on dental services. I think that is going to be a pretty special model that we can look at. So right now for Fairview, we have 136 individuals that are still at Fairview that are working on their transition plans. At Porterville in the general treatment area, there's 95 individuals. And then at Sonoma, there's 186. We have quite a few contracts right now with the Community State Staff Program. I think most people recall through Agnew's Developmental Center, the Community State Staff Program was fairly active. At Lannerman, it was not as active, but we are seeing a significant amount of activity right now, particularly with Sonoma Developmental Center, and then also it's ramping up with Fairview. So we have 14 contracts currently with 195 positions that can be filled. We have 50 positions total filled of the 195, and they're working quite a bit on doing some of the interviews and getting the supports. Having the expertise of the staff that are working at the developmental centers in the community has really been an area that has helped provide the support. I do want to say that one of the things that has had an impact, particularly with Sonoma, and I don't see it going to delay closures at all. The progress that has already been made has been really remarkable. But because of the evacuation with the fires, we are seeing that we're wanting to take a look and assess how is that impacting the development. Fortunately, most of the development has already happened. You know, there's the devastation to the community out in Santa Rosa and some of the other areas. Absolutely, we know that when you have a number of homes that are lost in a community, that you draw on the contractors and the supply and everything that needs to happen. So we are very, very fortunate that most of the work is already in progress. So I don't anticipate, but we're continuing to monitor it as we move forward. I think it's important to also just share that through the work that happened with the evacuations with Sonoma, I know that in Southern California, many people are doing the best that they can do right now to manage through the fires in Southern California. And it's not within the evacuation that occurred with Sonoma. When you look at the work that the service providers have done in the community as far as helping support individuals as they've been evacuated, their own staff, it really has been an area. We get updates from Omar out of Tri-Counties and also with some of the fires out of San Diego, getting updates from the work. There's been a number of homes that individuals have had to evacuate and then also supported individuals in supported living. All of the emergency plans have actually, I mean, it's impressive the support and how the community has come together. And so happy to have some conversations, but we have much to go through today. I did just want to acknowledge the staff at Sonoma, the community support that occurred, state that supported the efforts at Sonoma was just absolutely remarkable. Also want to make sure that we give acknowledgement to the supports of many of the providers that came forward to step. So I did just get a note that we didn't do introductions of the task force members that are on the phone, so we're going to take a quick break here and have the operator open up the line to do the introductions of the task force members that are on the phone. Diana? Sorry, it's just easier for me to say it once instead of say it to Nancy and then say it. But the task force members on the phone have their lines open and they can participate. And so a reminder to those of you on the phone that are task force members, your line is open all the time, so please put it on mute. We were getting a little bit of back noise when your lines got opened. The public who is on the phone will be opened at the time for public comment. But if you're a member of the committee and you're listening in, if you would introduce yourselves now and then put your phones back on mute. And as always, nobody put your phone on hold because there's music on some of those lines, and then we lose it for everyone. So if you're a committee member, if you would introduce yourself, and I'll give back to you.
Perfect. This is Heather Flores with Central Valley Regional Center. And my apologies for not being up there. We have a community winter formal tonight, and I'm invited to be MC for 400 individuals that we serve. So I do apologize. I wish I was there and could commend you in person, but thank you for the invitation, and I'm definitely on mute. Don't worry about it.
This is Lori Ramirez with the ARC President of Madera Counties, and I have the same commitment that Heather does, so that's why I'm not in Sacramento, and I will definitely make sure I'm on mute.
Fernanda Pena from Regional General Orange County, and I'm putting my phone on mute. Sorry.
Thanks, Fernando. Anyone else on the DS Task Force on the phone?
Who is the State Council? I was added yesterday, I believe, so I do apologize not being there in person.
Thank you. Anyone else? And we also had a couple of special arrivals for the chat. I just had to do that to you, Connie. I'm sorry.
It's so frustrating. I did the plot. I know it's a plot. You don't have early flights.
No.
You make a grand entrance, right?
So you wanted to introduce yourself real quick?
Do I
need a mic? That.
Okay. Hi, I'm Connie Lathan. I'm the parent of a son who's 49 who has the severe challenge of autism. I'm on the DS Task Force, and I'm really looking forward to this meeting. I won't say I'm the oldest person here, but I think I am.
Terry?
Terry DeVille, CASH PCR, Developmental Center Families from Porterville and Fairview. A sibling and on the board of directors of Fairview Families and Friends. Sorry, I just had a long flight.
We'll get you coffee. If you need it, Connie, we're going to get you coffee. But we're going to make it decaf, though, but that's okay. Okay, so on any questions or input regarding the developmental center closures before we move on to the next update? I know that was brief. So Keisha and then Terry.
Keisha Weather, State Council on Developmental Disabilities. What happens when fire takes out development homes in the community?
We were, from all the reports that we've had on all of the homes that were evacuated, so far we've not heard of any home that has burned down for individuals that we have had residing in the homes. Should that happen, there's always resources available for them to be able to go to. And the supports, like I said, have been absolutely remarkable as far as regional centers working with other providers. And there's options to be able to provide those supports through staffing and other measures. But fortunately, from all the reports that we've had, we have not had any of the homes that individuals that were residing in had a loss of home.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. They've been evacuated. Not all of them are back yet, but they have alternative housing with the staff providing them support.
That's wonderful news.
Yes, it is. Yeah. We'll keep an eye on it, though. Thank you, Keisha. Terry?
Terry DeVille. How is the collection of data coming from the DC Movers, in particular the longitudinal study and the participation of families and movers in it?
So I'll have to get back to you on exactly the status of the longitudinal study. I know that the QMEG have been, for Sonoma, they've been reviewing the data that has been pulled in general. And then with the NCI data, I know we've been doing it on an annual basis because the longitudinal study will be doing this on an annual basis. I'll see if I can get it before the end of today. If not, we can send that out to you. Other questions? Okay, great. The next item for updates is on disparity funding. So as most recall, back in March, the department and there's a panel that had presented to the Senate Human Services Committee on the disparity of an inequity of funding to underserved populations in the community and looking at, and this is an effort that we've been working on for a number of years. A lot of effort has moved forward as far as recognizing additional supports. So I won't go through all of the different criteria, but there's, on an annual basis, the regional centers have responsibility to review their purchase of service expenditures, compare how those expenditures are aligned with different ethnic groups, taking a look at how the plans within the local community can move forward and move that needle as far as improving and decreasing the inequity of the funding and the expenditures depending on each of the different ethnic groups as compared particularly with the white population and the peers. And so most of the work that's been done has really been looking at a lot of the data. Fortunately, a couple years ago, there was also legislation action that had occurred to allow for $11 million that can be invested in the community and to be able to start looking at different types of models and programs to be able to address the local issues. The first year of funding of $11 million, the proposals came in last year for the regional centers for 16-17. Regional centers submitted proposals, they were awarded, and there's a number of different types of services that were used to start addressing everything from translation of material to doing outreach. There is a lot, I would say the majority of the regional centers started advancing towards using the Promotora model or a navigator to be able to have an independent either a group or a community-based organization to work with families to help guide them through the regional center services or to understand how to access services or to better understand. Having the community meetings has also been extremely helpful to get information as to, well, what are some of the barriers? There's still a lot of work that still needs to be done, but that step forward has really helped to make sure that there's a focused effort to start addressing the area. Last year, there was action taken to be able to have the $11 million to be expanded to not only have regional centers that can be approved to use and access the $11 million, but also the community-based organizations. And it took us a little while to kind of figure out, okay, within our system, how do we go ahead and start opening up a grant that is going to be available not only to the regional centers, but then to community-based organizations. We had some really great conversations with different groups and stakeholders to say, how do we make sure that we have it broad enough so we can really get some grassroots efforts? We can really reach out to not only community-based organizations that we're familiar with, that we work with frequently, but also with some of the grassroots, some of the families that really have done their own efforts to try to outreach and do some work within their core communities. We are in the process of doing the final review of all of the proposals. We will have the final decision by the end of December. We're shooting to be able to get approvals out by the 21st. Because we had a lot of proposals, we may need just another week or two to be able to make sure that we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's and doing the fair review of it. But I want to give you just a little bit of the numbers. We had a total of 139 proposals that came into the department. 94 of the 139 proposals are new proposals, new to either the community, or it would be a new contract, or would be something that would be different, that is different than the approvals of proposals that occurred in 16-17. Of the 94, 61 of the proposals are from community-based organizations. 33 are from regional centers. We also had, in addition to the new proposals, a number of the proposals in 16-17 that were approved for regional centers to continue their efforts if it was demonstrated that progress was being made. There's 45 proposals that came in to continue the efforts from 16-17. One of the things that we did see that of the community-based organizations, some of the proposals were touching not only one regional center, but multiple regional centers. So you do see some of the community-based organizations that are touching, one, two, or maybe up to, I think there were like 7 or 8 different regional centers that it could touch. I can't get into too much more detail than that because we haven't done our review, finalized our review process. So I want to be very sensitive to not sharing too much information until everything is public at that time. So we have a total of the amount of proposals requested was $25 million. Community-based organizations requested $15 million and regional centers $10 million. We have had our statewide meetings in November where we met with the community and received input and compared to the prior year. And what our strategy has been is to make sure that each year that we go out is that we're not going to the same community. So we're trying to rotate it throughout the state, so we can have different opportunities for the community to provide the department input in addition to their local community with the regional centers. We did hear that we are seeing some progress and feedback from the community that the efforts from some of the new proposals that were implemented last year are helping. They're also, some of the feedback has been that the communication between the regional centers and the community on talking about some strategies is also something that there's been some very positive feedback. They also shared some continued barriers as far as making sure that there's access to services and sharing some of the areas that they would want us to focus on, cultural competency, sensitivity, making sure there's continued efforts to be able to do the outreach that's necessary. So feeling really, really good about the response that we had on the community-based organizations, and we'll look forward to getting that out to everybody. We're also working as a follow-up to the March hearings that we had is the measures, looking at how are we going to measure and start moving and demonstrating that that needle is moving forward. Dr. Lovell has worked with us. She's in charge of our research section at the department, and we'll have some draft measures that we would like to have posted. Our goal is to have them all posted by the end of December. So we would look for feedback from the community. We can send out a notice to all of you when they're posted so you can take a look at them and then give us feedback as to what those measures. Measures are addressing everything from looking at eligibility time frames within the different ethnic communities, looking at the use of expenditures and purchase of service, looking at outreach that is occurring, and then also looking at different age groups. So focusing on, what are the expenditures between 0 and 21, looking at the older age groups. And so there's a lot. We wanted to do a broad outreach look or picture within those measures. And so we'll look forward to your feedback before we post the final measures that would be posted the first part of January. Any questions on the disparity funding or the efforts that we're doing? Will?
Will Sanford. So in the barriers, has it been identified that availability of services due to, I'll call low funding or inappropriate or not inappropriate, but lack of funding, service providers is one of the barriers. I know for us to be able to get people who are bilingual or otherwise, we can't fund it because of the way the rates are currently capped, especially median rates. So is that one of the barriers that people are at least looking at or identifying that comes in that that's a piece that we need a fix for in order to really change the needle? Because right now you can't really shift how we're spending dollars very well based on those, especially in high-cost areas.
Yeah, and some of the feedback that we received was that was part of it. Some providers had shared that. We also have seen some proposals that have come in for the $11 million to see if that, because the $11 million can be available to help with bilingual staffing that can assist with that. So there's currently some efforts that can be used, but that was identified. It's also one of the areas that we want to take a look at the scope of work that Burns and Associate is doing in the rate study as well. Marty?
Marty Moto, CDCAN. Oh, just want to remind that people should make sure they're introducing themselves for the people on the phone. And first of all, thank you for all the efforts that you have made personally on the issue of disparities, reducing disparities, especially with the advisory group that you set up. So one of two things. One is to emphasize that no matter all the other topics that we're going to talk about today, and I've mentioned this before, is that the idea of reducing, or the goal of reducing disparities, which, by the way, is never a final victory. It will always be an ongoing effort, is a part of everything we do. So, yeah, there is funding targeted for that effort specifically, which I think is really good. I think all of us believe it's really good. But want to emphasize that that concept of, or that goal of reducing disparities, along with all several other goals that we want to see achieved, are part of all the other things that we do.
Right.
And sometimes we forget that. We think that certain efforts are siloed and you know, disparities is over here, a competitive integrated employment's over there, and something else. So I'm also pleased to hear that these measurements or these issues regarding disparities as part of the rate study, where they'll be looking at that. So that's really important. One of the things, though, is the measurements piece, and I'm glad you mentioned that and posting the goal, the way that the department, the state will be measuring the outcomes of the efforts. So I know that will be by the end of December. But my question is, you mentioned that you're measuring right now certain things done by the regional centers and also by other groups, and that progress was made. And I guess my question is what determines that right now? And when you mention that progress is being made, you know, what are we referring to exactly?
No, thanks for the clarification, Marty. So a couple of things. One is, when I'm looking on the measures that we're going to be posting, that's statewide. Do know, though, that there's several different layers, is the best way to describe it, of ways to measure. There's going to be different efforts around that. So regional centers, on an annual basis, they work within their community, and they present the purchase of service, the expenditure data, and then they develop their plans and then their goals. So that's one effort that is done at a local level. In addition to, with the $11 million, any project that is being developed has to have an ability to measure kind of progress. And so you have to take a look at that. Now, most of the projects have not had a significant amount of time to really get a measure, because they have not been in weren't effective, at least for a year. They haven't been in operation. So we still need time to be able to get a really quantifiable measurement on that. So that's another piece of it. Our measures are all statewide. So when you take a look at them, there's not a lot of, I mean, we're not going to have 100 measures. We want to take a look at, say, about 10 to 15 measures that we can really look at and start tracking, but also make sure that they're flexible. So we can have the measures, see how we're being able to track that needle and move that needle forward. But if we're not doing it, the tracking, in the way that we need to do the tracking, if it's not capturing what we need, we can add another measure the next year. And I'm very open to making sure that we continue to assess what are we measuring, and then if we're not measuring it, then let's go ahead and add something new to it. It's a fluid process to make sure that we have an ongoing dialogue.
And thank you for that. And I just wanted to add one thing I forgot to mention was at the Oakland statewide hearing that the department conducted in Oakland, and so there was three, and that's the one I attended. There was several people who brought up the issue of disparities as it relates to type of disability, and they were referring to people with developmental disabilities, not specifically coming from communities of color, though, but they were referring to people who are hearing impaired or deaf. And it struck me, though, that I think that may be something that the state or the task force will need to look at is how does reducing disparities, generally speaking, is a good effort or needs to happen, but how do we make sure that in doing that we're reducing disparities in certain types of disabilities, including mental health needs, because sometimes certain groups, the advocacy groups, the community-based groups, are much more vocal, or maybe they have more connections to the state than other groups. And I think it's just important that we don't forget that. And I thought, again, the hearing was the staff there from DDS was good. And one other suggestion that I heard from some people attending that hearing, but also one that I would offer up myself, is maybe collectively we need to rethink how do we do those statewide hearings to involve more people. Again, there was a lot of people there, but it's just sure. They are hard to get to for people who have limited resources. So thank you.
No, I appreciate that feedback. Yeah. Additional comments, questions? Okay. Keisha.
Keisha Weather, State Council on Developmental Disabilities. Yes, piggybacking on what Marty says, I feel that the disparities in terms of different disabilities in the regional center system is very important. So it's very important that we understand the disparities about different disabilities. Like I understand, I'm for the UCLA Charter Center, I'm part of a disability work group for my organization, mm-hmm. and we're working with the USA USED, which is another USED in California, and with Dr. Wheeler, Barbara Wheeler, who's a disability expert, which we love. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that there's different disparities in disability groups. Like hearing is one, mental health is another, and another disability group in terms of disability is also Tourette's. Tourette's is another disability that is underrepresented in the regional center system. And I feel that it's important that these people with these disabilities are understood and have the resources in the regional center system to come to the table and get the services they need.
Oh, thank you, Keisha. Going back also to what Marty's saying and what you're saying, one of the things we have started to see. And it's probably, oftentimes you'll hear me talk about access to services, you know, inequity, you know, as opposed to disparity. Because through the discussions that we've had, we've been able to broaden some of our mm-hmm. work, you know, and you're bringing up some additional things. Because of the discussions that we have and the dialogue that we have and the input, we are able to say, how are we going to drill into the detail or the data a little differently to understand where else we need to start addressing. And I'll give you a couple of examples. As we started looking at some of the information, the discussions with the different groups and the meetings we've had, we started recognizing that not only is it within the purchase of service expenditures, but we needed to start taking a look at what percentage of the individuals that are receiving services at the regional centers by ethnicity as compared to the community population. So we did notice in certain geographic areas and statewide that the Asian population is not the same percentage of the regional center consumer population as that of the general population. It's a lower percentage. So we were able to expand, say, okay, wait, we need to start taking a look at making sure that folks are actually accessing the services and if there's some work that needs to be done. So that's been a focus we've been able to do by just doing feedback like you're just giving us now. The other is also with language. When we're taking
language barriers,
language and looking at, because when we're looking at data on the aggregate, we're noticing sometimes on the data that while we may be looking at the Hispanic population as compared to white and then certain services, that actually there doesn't appear to be a difference in the expenditures. But when we drill down a little bit more and look at monolingual Spanish versus others, we'll see that there is a difference. So we have, what we're learning is that as we have discussions, we do get the opportunity to look at the data differently. So that's why, to Marty's point, this is an ongoing discussion. This is not something that says that we have an event, we're going to release measures, we're going to go ahead and do $11 million, and we've checked the box. That's not it at all.
Well, that's excellent, Nancy, yeah. Because I don't want the department to say this disparity is going to stop right now. I want this to be an ongoing discussion because this disparity has been going on for 20 years.
Yep.
And we need to get these people, and we need to get all these people that are doing this disparity help.
Yep. And what we can do is that as we have discussions later this afternoon and talk about where does this task force want to make sure that we have discussion areas going forward, this may be one of the areas you want to take a look at. You know, so as we, you know, as we have future discussions as a task force, you know, there's a number of different groups that we work with, but you know, that's something you all may want to consider as part of the discussions going forward, because it is something that we want to make sure that we keep going.
I am. I would think that from my personal perspective, I would think that the task force would like to get involved with the disparity discussion, definitely.
Great. Thank you, Keisha.
Sure.
Okay, anything else before we move forward on an update on the safety net? Okay, so I'm going to have Brad and Leanne. Can you guys come up and give an update? We've been very fortunate. So as they come up, and we have a couple seats here for them. As we have been moving forward with the implementation of the safety net plan, I think we've introduced both of them in the past, but again, I just want to emphasize how fortunate we are as a department and as a system to have Dr. Leanne Christian to lead the safety net plan implementation and Dr. Brad Backstrom to be a partner in that with a particular focus on the development of the STAR services, the acute crisis, and also the mobile, and then looking at how we're doing the transitions from the secure treatment program. They've become quite the force to reckon with a pair that's moving forward with safety net. It's been really terrific to see the efforts. But again, it's going to be just as critical to make sure that we continue to have discussions as to where we are, get your input. Again, this is not another one that's just saying that we're done here. This is an ongoing and fluid process. It was a introduction of the safety net plan, where we're going, and then we'll have to continue to say where else do we kind of need to take it. But for today, I wanted to give you the update as to where we are with the plan. I do want to also say, though, that because so much of the effort was focused on the development of the community resources for STAR services and the mobile crisis, and much of that also had to do with the work that Leanne and Brad have been doing. We also pulled them when we had to do the evacuation at Sonoma. They were at the evacuation site 24/7, basically. So we had a pause. We had to push the pause button for a few weeks. And so you'll see that there's probably about a 4 to 6 week difference between some of the things that we've looked at before. So I just want to kind of share that with you, that while there may have been a little bit of a pause on some of the development, it's not delaying it significantly at all. So with that.
Okay. Great. Well, good morning. Thank you so much for are we on? I have no idea. How do you turn it on? Are we on? No.
You may have to. There you go. Why don't you try this one?
Yeah.
That's okay, Nancy.
Why don't
you pull that
Is
down?
This on?
Use this one.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, good morning. So as Nancy said, Brad and I have really been partners since we both started at headquarters in August. And we're just excited to share with you, since your July meeting, some of the updates to the safety net plan. And I think I can speak for both of us. We were both very excited as we looked at the safety net plan that was released in May and saw how much it was informed by the work of this task force and also through the stakeholder process around the state. So I think you'll see a lot of the work that you put into the plan coming to fruition as we give you some of the updates. And Brad's going to give you the updates on the STAR program first.
Yes, and my name is Brad Backstrom, and again, it's a pleasure to be here and really excited to work on these projects that have been built on from the work group from the years past. So a few updates for the North Star home. This is the North Star Acute Crisis Home that's currently at Sonoma Developmental Center for 5 beds. The plan is to transition to 2 4- to 5-bed homes in this fiscal year. And then an additional home of 5 beds in the following fiscal year of 18-19. DDS is working with Regional Center of the East Bay and reviewing proposals for a housing development organization to assist in the purchasing of the 2 homes, and we are going to begin searching in the North Bay area. The goal is to have well-designed homes ready for individuals to serve by the fall of 2018. The South Star, which is a 1 5-bed acute crisis home at Fairview Developmental Center. The plan has been to renovate 2 existing homes on the Fairview Developmental Center property at Mark Lane in this fiscal year to serve up to 10 consumers. And currently we are working with DGS to renegotiate the lease and move forward. And then we are going to begin developing plans for schematic design and renovation of the 2 homes to meet the needs of this population. We also have the STAR Mobile Acute Crisis Teams. These will be 2 state-operated acute crisis teams operating out of both North STAR and South STAR. And this is a program that's tailored for individuals who are ages 12 and older and are at risk for placement, losing placement in their current setting, and may be at risk for being placed in a STAR home or a more restrictive setting. And the STAR Mobile Crisis Team will receive referrals directly from the Regional Center and provide assessment and collaboration with the consumers, providers, Regional Center, and Regional Crisis Teams in developing and delivering crisis stabilizations. And one of the things that we can provide is in-home coaching and consultation from psychiatric technicians and psychiatric instructors. And so the team of the mobile crisis team will include a psychologist, social worker, registered nurse, psychiatric technicians, and psych tech instructors. We are not replacing the emergency response, emergency responders or the regional center services that provide crisis services already, but will be a secondary service to the regional centers and the consumers and providers. We've added positions to STAR and have a projected start date of January by phasing in for North STAR. We'll phase in with North Bay Regional Center and Regional Center of the East Bay, and South STAR will be phasing in with Regional Center of Orange County and San Gabriel Pomona Regional Center. And that will help us establish the program and then determine what the capacity is and just get the program established before moving forward and phasing in with other regional centers. And we're looking forward to meeting with other regional centers and providers and community services and crisis services in different regional centers, as we did with the four that we're going to begin working with, and expanding from there. And did you want to talk about the secret achievement?
So one of the other components of the safety net plan is to develop services and supports for people who are transitioning out of Porterville Developmental Center Secure Treatment Program. And so as part of the plan for those services and supports, we're developing homes that are going to be vendor run in the Central Valley area. Two homes are going to, are projected to start serving folks in fall or winter of next year. And so we've been meeting fairly regularly with people at Central Valley Regional Center. They have posted the RFP for the Housing Development Organization, and requests are due, I think, on the 22nd of December. So we're going through that process. And then we've been working with them and just talking about the expertise that we're looking for from providers for these homes. They're slotted to potentially be enhanced behavioral supports homes. And kind of looking at them as transition homes for people coming in out of Porterville, and it will just be one option for some of those people in the secure treatment program. So again, we're working with them with Central Valley on the RFP that will hopefully be posted later in December or early January for the provider of those homes.
Okay, and additionally, plan for intensive individualized transition support and wraparound services for folks coming out of the secure treatment at Porterville Developmental Center. And this is a group that will have extensive expertise in forensic issues, behavioral and psychiatric, and sometimes medical issues, provide comprehensive supports to clinical teams at Porterville, the regional center, and the provider as individuals are stepping down from the secure treatment, and have an emphasis on positive behavior supports, person-centered practices, and be able to provide a risk assessment for individuals that are leaving to identify what the support needs are going to be in addition to the existing transition services that are there. Currently, DDS was required to consult with appropriate professionals to develop the parameters for the intensive transition service, and we had a work group in August that gathered input from various professionals and who have expertise in this area, and we are working on developing the RFP. Are required to work with Disability Rights California to ensure appropriate safeguards for the protection of clients' rights, and so we will meet with them prior to posting the RFP. And so the contract or expected selected date is hopefully early 2018 and with a service date of spring of 2018.
And then another component similar to what we're developing for the individuals transitioning out of Porterville Secure Treatment Program is looking also at the individuals who have co-occurring developmental disabilities and mental health issues who are in IMDs or college hospital. And just so that you know, kind of the current status, there's approximately 60 people throughout the state currently in placement in IMDs. Two of them are under 18. And so we are developing four vendor-operated homes for those. They're slated to be community crisis homes. One will be in Northern California. We're working with Far Northern Regional Center on the development of that one in Central California. And we're working with Alta Regional Center. And then two in Southern California, we're working with San Gabe Pomona Regional Center. So the work that we've done with them is we've been having monthly calls with all three of those regional centers about the four homes to really kind of coordinate what's the best model, what are we looking for in providers. All of them either have posted or in the process of posting RFPs for the housing development organizations, and then we'll be soon following with the RFPs for the providers. In addition to the monthly calls, just to talk about the RFPs and what the best model will be to develop those homes and looking at the expertise that the providers will need to provide the best services and supports. We've also started having calls with all the regional centers who currently have someone in an IMD so that we can be really more in tune with who they are, how long they've been there, whether the regional centers have good options and have what their plans have been to transition those folks out to less restrictive settings. And so we've already had calls with two regional centers. We have calls at the end of this week and next week with another two, and we'll be doing that quarterly so that we can all be working collaboratively on what the plans are and what the needs of those individuals are to get them transitioned to less restrictive settings. And then the last leg of implementation really on the safety net is pulling together the framework for the intensive transition support. So again, sort of what we're seeing is some similar needs to the individuals who will be transitioning out of Porterville Secure Treatment, folks who have those co-occurring developmental disabilities and mental health issues. And so we have an internal meeting next week to talk about the transition services, and then we'll be reaching out to some regional centers to see how we want to develop regional resources for the intensive transition services specifically for the individuals transitioning out of the IMDs. And then finally, one of the requirements, I think you all talked about it in July, is the requirement to develop guidelines for the use of restraint or containment in enhanced behavioral supports homes. So to give you an update on that, DDS is required to consult with appropriate professionals around the use of restraint and containment, and also with Disability Rights California about client protections. And we did hold a work group on November 29th, had about 25 people, folks from DRC. Also, we had some psychologists, some board-certified behavior analysts, a representative, several representatives from the regional centers who currently have enhanced behavioral support homes open in their area, as well as providers who are already providing those services or are kind of coming online pretty quickly with their enhanced behavioral supports homes. And we felt like that meeting was very positive. We got a lot of good support, not just on the use of restraint and containment per se, but also all of the positive things you can be doing and the proactive things that we want to see in those guidelines to avoid and minimize the use of restraint and containment. And I think people were very aligned philosophically on what our ultimate goal was and how to best develop those guidelines. So our next steps is writing those guidelines, which we're in the process of, and once we have written a final draft of those, then again getting input from DRC before they're adopted.
Yes, and yeah. Any EBSH provider that is currently in operating or certified and licensed will be required to meet the guidelines within 30 days following the adoption of the guidelines.